Desire and interest in your prayers. Sometimes we come to this place or during the course of our week, and I know some of you are around me a lot more than others. And I know we are with each other in different settings, different circumstances. Sometimes we're in settings where the roles are shifted, where might be the same group of people, but another one would be looked at or respected as the leader or the one that would have the last say. In some situations we feel like we're maybe peers and we all have an equal voice. And I know today we're in a setting where you're expecting the minister to have something from the Lord, and I want it to be from the Lord. So I desire your prayers that the words we say today will be words that God can put His stamp of approval on. Thinking about the words of an old song that most of us have heard some variation of, and I don't feel like I have the original words to this song. I'm not going to try to sing it for you, but I understand there seems to be several maybe versions of it. The title of the song is Old Time Religion. Some of the words go like this, kind of a little chorus. Give me that old time religion. That's repeated three times, and then it's concluded. The chorus is concluded with, "It's good enough for me." And I've heard a version where they said it was good enough for Paul and Silas, and I didn't find that version to copy in the print, but one verse says, "It makes me love everybody, makes me love everybody, makes me love everybody, it's good enough for me." Another verse said, "Well, it was good enough for mother, it was good enough for papa, it was good enough for sister, it's good enough for me. And it will do me when I'm dying." And that's repeated three times, and then he says, "It's good enough for me." And I'm sure you all have heard other verses, other words to that song. And I know it's not maybe a really maybe a musically such a challenging piece, or even maybe thought-provoking as far as deep words, but I want us to consider the religion, the gospel, the pattern of life that those that have gone on before us have lived, and recognize I believe the message in the words of that song is they recognize the value of what the older generation had. So I'd like to begin today, maybe in Genesis, the 27th chapter, and I want to notice what Isaac said here. I read a couple verses from this chapter to the boys last night. I'm going to use this in a totally different manner, Lord willing, than we did last night, but in Genesis, the 27th chapter, in the second verse, Isaac is preparing to bless his son with the birthright because he's at the end. He recognizes he's at the end of his life. And he says here in verse 2, and he said, he's talking to Esau actually, he said, "Behold, now I am old. I know not the day of my death." And I just want us to put a few things in perspective here. One of them is, I'm considerably older now than I was when I came to Webb City. I still wouldn't classify myself as old, but I'm getting there. I know I am. I know that the plausibility of me living to be twice as old as I am now is pretty much zero. You know, when I came here, the plausibility or the feasibility of me being able to live till I was twice that old was realistic. I was 38 when I came. And I'm 52 now. So, you know, the chances of me making it to 104 are just not very good. And I know that. So I know that I'm sneaking up on what everybody would call old. Some of you think I'm old already, but I'm sneaking up on that category of old age. So I just want... I want you to get a hold of something. You know, I still have an ability to be cognizant in my mind of the things that I've observed when I was young, very young. I've been around what you know, what I know, the Church of God to be all of my life. Didn't come from some other background. I didn't come from a background where my parents didn't try to raise me in the right manner. So I want us to recognize that there was real value in those that have gone on before me and before my wife. Before those of you that are older than me, there's been some real value, some real valuable lives. There's been some real saints that have lived in their present world. So, just as Isaac had something that he wanted to say, wanted to pass on, and wanted to share with his descendants, I have something I want to share today. I'd like to move on now to Psalms, the 37th Psalm. And I want to notice what David said here. Psalms 37, and beginning in verse 23, he says, "The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delighteth in his way." Now, a lot of us know some good people, and I believe he's talking about more than just someone that we would classify as good as far as having a good attitude or about life or something like that. I believe he's talking about someone that is endeavoring to please the Lord here. He says, "The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delighteth in his way." The Lord takes great pleasure in those that are endeavoring to please him. All right? So he says, "Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholdeth him with his hand." Just because someone is endeavoring to please the Lord with their life and maybe has endeavored to live for God over a number of years, maybe over a span of a great period of time, doesn't mean that you and I won't see some human shortcomings in their experience. But when we recognize those things, he says, "Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholdeth him with his hand." Did you know the Lord wants us all to succeed? He wants us all to make heaven. He's not looking for an opportunity to crush any one of us. He wants to help us along. He's going to uphold us with his hand. And I'm thinking about those that have gone on before my time and what I've endeavored to live to myself. And I want to have the values that my predecessors had. I want to have something that the Lord can look down and take pleasure in. I want him to delight in the way that I choose to live my life. I want him to delight in the way you choose to follow, to guide your steps. And he says here, I have been young and now I'm old. Yet have I not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. I've been, as I said earlier, I've been young. I've witnessed those that the Lord's anointing was on their life. I've witnessed those that when they sang and when they prayed and when they preached, it was like all heaven stood at attention. Some of you know what I'm talking about. I've witnessed those things in my life. And one thing that I've come to the realization is this. And now that I'm getting older, I have not seen the righteous forsaking nor his seed begging bread. I've seen those that have endeavored to follow God with utmost integrity face some very difficult things in their life. But I have not seen them forsaken. I am of the conclusion and the persuasion that it is the best way to live. There are other ways to live. There are other things to try to achieve and try to gain in this life. But I'm telling you that I'm convinced that this is the best way to follow. It's the best guide to live by. It's the best thing. And you know, we don't want to become a group of people that the Lord's presence is not with us. We don't want that. We want the Lord's presence with us. We want Him in our singing. We want people's hearts to be moved during a song service, whether it's in the chapel or whether you invite people to a tent meeting or wherever. We want people to be moved with the presence of the Lord by the singing, by the words that's said. And it doesn't come because we have more talent. It comes because there's a sincerity and a genuine following the Lord in our everyday lives. And because we bring the Lord's presence with us, we're not all showing up just expecting to get where the Lord's already at. Okay? We have to bring the Lord's presence with us. We have to live in a manner that He dwells in our hearts and in our lives. So we notice here, reading in Psalms 37, verse 26, He is ever merciful and lendeth, and His seed is blessed. Depart from evil and do good and dwell forevermore. So here's the scenario. Depart from evil, do good, and dwell forevermore. So if you're in a place that you're not being pleasing to the Lord, then get away from it. Depart from it. Do good. And the reward for that is that we'll live forevermore with the Lord, yes. But we can truly live now. We can truly experience the blessings in the presence of God right now in our everyday lives. And he says, the last verse we want to read here is, For the Lord loveth judgment and forsaketh not his saints. They are preserved forever, but the seed of the wicked shall be cut off. The ultimate end for wickedness is that they will be cut off. And we don't want that. I don't want that for my children. I don't want that for my grandchildren. I want them to follow righteousness carefully. I want them to dwell and live forevermore. The psalmist here says, I was young and now I'm old. And now that I get older, I am thinking that I hope, I trust, I've been instrumental somehow with the help of the Lord to help others to be built up spiritually, to be built up in your relationships with other people, in your occupations, your literal things that you do every day, and in your parenting, in your relationships with your spouses, I trust the Lord has helped us to somehow build, help you build a better foundation. But I don't want it to stop there. I believe the Lord has something that's magnificent for His people. I want you that are younger, I want you to be able to build something that brings glory and honor to the cause of God. I want you to be able to take what you've been given and build on that. Use it for a stepping stone or a foundation, whatever you need. The Lord help you to build on it to the point that it becomes something that magnifies God. That's what I want you to do. I'd like to turn now to the book of Galatians. And I'd like to look at the second chapter. And I was reading this week, and this stood out to me. This chapter is talking about, well, there's several things involved here, but one of the things that's happening is some conflict between Paul and Peter, and what Paul feels like is some inconsistencies. Peter's addressing some problems, or Paul is, I'm sorry. I'd like to look beginning in verse 11. He says, "But when Peter came to Antioch, I withstood him to the face because he was to be blamed." Now that doesn't sound like a pleasant situation, does it? You withstand somebody to their face, that sounds like, we would say, a confrontation. He says, "For before that certain came from James," so before some came from James, James most likely being the one that wrote the book in the scripture, which also meant that he was most likely a sibling of Jesus, okay? One of Mary and Joseph's children. So he would have been of what nationality? He'd been a Hebrew, he'd have been a Jew, okay? So he says here, "For before that certain came from James, he did eat with the Gentiles." He's talking about Peter here, okay? Peter ate with the Gentiles. "But when they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were of the circumcision." And this is the reason that Paul withstood Peter. Okay? He says, "And the other Jews dissembled that likewise with him, insomuch that Barnabas also was carried away with their dissimulation." So the Jews that came from James, from Jerusalem, to Galatia, where Paul was, where Peter was, and until they got there, Peter was eating with the Gentiles. But after they got there, he withdrew himself. And then when they had made such a difference, what did he say here? Dissemble themselves. They made such a difference that Barnabas, which was working closely with Paul, was affected too. All right? So Paul sees, we got a real problem developing here. Okay, y'all following me? He says, that's why he withstood Peter to his face in front of everybody. "But when I saw that they walked not uprightly according to" what? The tradition of the Jews? No. "According to the truth of the gospel, I said unto Peter, before them all, if thou being a Jew livest after the manner of Gentiles and not as do the Jews, why compellest thou the Gentiles to live as do the Jews?" So, If you're willing to live with the Gentiles and fellowship them, then why have you started making this difference and compelling them to be like the Jews? All right? We who are Jews by nature and not sinners of the Gentiles, knowing that a man is not justified by works of the law, but by the faith of Jesus Christ, even we have believed in Jesus Christ that we might be justified by the faith of Christ, and not by the works of the law, for by the works of the law shall no flesh be justified. But if while we seek to be justified by Christ, we ourselves also are found sinners, is therefore Christ the minister of sin? God forbid. Christ did not come to promote sin. So a doctrine that says you can sin and still go to heaven is not from Christ. Alright? Plain and simple. He says, for if I build again the things which I destroyed, I make myself a transgressor. For I through the law am dead to the law, that I might live unto God. I am justified with Christ, nevertheless I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. I do not frustrate the grace of God, for if righteousness came by the law, then Christ is dead in vain. If you could be right with God by legislation, then Christ died in vain. But we couldn't be. The only way that we can be justified in the eyes of God is by accepting the blood sacrifice that Jesus paid and allow the atonement that He provided through His sacrificial death on the cross to wash away our sins. We've talked about that recently. I don't know that I can totally explain how it works, but it does. But if we try to be right with God any other way than embracing the fact that Jesus died for me, I'm not going to get there. But there will be works that follow. All right? We're not going to go down that path just right now. But I want us to focus on those verses I began with. One of the big concerns here with those that were coming from Jerusalem, that were Jews, was over their position on circumcision. And there was a major conflict over that. And they just wouldn't eat. Can you imagine? We feel like we're far above the racial injustices that have impacted our society in the United States from 50, 75, 100 years ago. We feel like we're a long ways from that. We've heard about, some of you have had experiences where people that were of different ethnic background were denied service and were expected to sit somewhere else. And all. We don't feel like we do that anymore, by and large. But this is what they wouldn't sit down and eat with them. Is there anybody that you would refuse to sit at the same table and eat with today? I would hope not. But Paul said, this is not right. Well, these are people that have been saved. They're part of the gospel. They're part of Christianity. And you won't even sit down and eat with them. He says, you are violating the truth of the gospel. All right? But I want us to get a hold of something here. I don't want to try to twist something totally out of context, but I want us to get a hold of a fundamental principle that's in these verses. He says, this was having an impact. You remember? It was having an impact not just on Peter, but Barnabas was like Paul's right-hand man. And it was impacting Barnabas to the point that it says that Barnabas also was carried away with their dissimulation. the differences that they were making between themselves and the Gentile brethren. They were holding them off at a distance. They were making there was a problem going on. And he goes on to say, but when I saw that they walked not uprightly according to the truth of the gospel, I said unto Peter before them all, if thou, being a Jew, livest after the manner of Gentiles and not as do the Jews, why compellest thou the Gentiles that to live as do the Jews? What are you trying to put on them? So I want us to think about something here. There's a principle involved here that I want us to get a hold of for the day that we live in. I believe that we live in the midst of a wicked and perverse society. Everybody agree? I believe that there's wickedness on every hand. And I don't believe that we can live like the world and be pleasing to God. Alright? I believe that's a logical conclusion. Because the Lord has placed judgment on those works of unrighteousness. So, Lord, help us to not... let me ask you a question. How many of you would like to see, you don't have to answer this verbally or any way, I just want you to answer this to yourself. How many of you would really like to see the population of the United States of America truly and completely turn to God with their whole heart, soul, and mind and strength? I'll tell you that I'd like to see that. I'd like to see, you know, if you go south of Carthage there, there's some businesses on the old road off to one side. There's a obviously it was a gas station. They got the roof out there and a place where the gas pumps were. And there's another place that sold... candies and fudge, and some you can read some of their signs. It's still on the building. We would have called it a tourist trap years ago. It was a place you could stop for gas, and the children could say, "Oh, can we have some fudge or can we have some candy over here?" And there's a road that's not travel very much because they built a new highway over next to it. The businesses are extinct. Now, you know what would happen if the American society truly humbled their hearts and repented and really changed, if revival really happened? There'd be a lot of... I can think, you know, if you go right west of here just a little bit, right over there about the state line in the corner down there where Oklahoma and Kansas and Missouri meet, there's some businesses over there that all of a sudden would be ghost towns. And you know these places that have these yellow signs along the highway? They would go out of business too. Lord, help us to have a real... I would love to see all of my neighbors... I would like to see true congregations just springing up everywhere. People wanting to, and being so many people wanting to come that, well, with no sense, we might as well just have a local congregation and everybody. I mean, can you imagine how many church buildings there would be? There used to be a little church building just every little bit down out through the countryside. It'd be like that again if people would truly turn their hearts to the Lord. There'd be a lot of businesses go out of. There would be other businesses that would do well. I'd love to see that. But how are we going to... The principle I'm talking about here in Galatians is, how are we going to... really attract them if we try to be like them. What's different? You know, there's people that go in to those places over there that I think, I really believe would go out of business. There's people that go in there and they try to profess Christianity too. I can't go in there. Maybe I could if I'm going in to help somebody get out. But I can't be a patron of those places. But there are people that go in there as patrons of those places that consider themselves Christians. There's something wrong with this. Paul says to these people, to the folks he's working with, what do you want them to be like? Are you wanting them to be like Gentiles that's ungenerated, or are you wanting them to be like Jews? Jews may be representing Christianity, but I believe what he's talking about here was Jews representing legalistic. That's what he was really talking about. Lord, help us to get a hold that there's a difference between living for God and following after the world. So I want to ask you another question. If all of Satan's devices would lose their power in our world that we live in, I know that's hard to fathom, it's hard to imagine, but if all of Satan's devices was to lose their power, and all the sinful appetites that Satan puts in people's hearts would all of a sudden be gone because people had their hearts right with God, would we miss anything? Is there anything that you feel like you would miss? I believe it's a question that you ought to ask yourself. If all of the things that's promoted by the sinful world around us would be depowered, the plug pulled. You know what happens when something is not funded any longer by our government? There's things that just disappear when the funding disappears. You know, if the funding disappeared for Satan's organizations and they started disappearing, would there be little twinges? Would there be things that you would miss? I hope not. I'd like to turn now. You remember James was one that was identified here by Peter, but I'd like to turn to the book of James. And I'd like to start reading in the first verse, I believe, of the first chapter of James. I would like to, before I begin at verse 1, I'd like to read verse 27, the last verse. It says, "Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world." Now I believe it's very good and very profitable for us to spend time going to visit those that are disadvantaged, whether it be those in the nursing home or those that have lost maybe their parents or husband or something like that, and try to be as much assistance as possible to them. And he says it's also part of the sign of pure religion is to keep ourselves unspotted from the world. But I'd like to begin at verse 1, and I'd like for us to notice what James says here. "James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad, greeting." He's talking to the children of Israel. This morning I'm talking to what, in my perspective, are representatives of the church this morning. I'm talking to those that have a desire to be pleasing to God. So that's who James was talking to. He says, greeting, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into divers or various temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience, but let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. Did you know that the Lord wants us to learn through our trials and our tests, to learn patience, to learn, to let patience perfect us, to allow the trials perfect us. He says, let us allow that perfecting process to work, that we may not be wanting. Okay, he says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. The Lord wants to give us wisdom in every part of our life. He wants to give us wisdom with our relationships. You know, he's wanted to do that all along. James is pointing that out. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. But let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. What's James talking about? He's wanting us to be sold out to live for the Lord and not be double-minded or keeping something else in the back of our mind. And you know, if we get a chance, get an opportunity, we'll allow our affections to go out to this or that. No, that's one of the reasons I asked the question, if Satan's devices went out of business, would we miss anything? It's a sign of being double-minded. If there's something we would miss, that's part of Satan's business tactics out there. All right? He says, let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he is exalted, but the rich in that he is made low, because as the flower of the grass, he shall pass away. For the sun is no sooner risen with a burning heat, but it withereth the grass, and the flower thereof falleth, and the grace of the fashion of it perisheth. So also shall the rich man fade away in his ways. Blessed is the man that endureth temptation. That brother of low degree. He said, blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Lord, help us. Right now, Satan's in business, and his business is prospering. And Lord, help us to be able to endure temptation, to come through temptation without succumbing to it. We cannot afford to succumb to the temptations that's around us. He says, let no man say when he's tempted, I'm tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. Keep that in mind. You feel like you're being tempted beyond your abilities to resist. Remember, it's not God, it's the devil. God wants to help you. God will help us. But we can't expect him to help us if we don't call on him. If we get in times of trouble and we don't cry out for Jesus to help us, we're going to fail. But we all have temptations. It's not God's design to try to trip us or trick us up. Remember what we read in Psalms? The Lord, He rejoices in the steps of a good man. He wants to help us. And if He stumbles, He's there to help, lift us up and hold us up. He wants to do that. But He can't if we don't call out for help. I can remember those times as a little boy growing up and I felt really independent and maybe I've been told that I told my parents that I do it. Well, yeah, maybe I could at some point, but I was too immature at the time and I needed help. And they were wanting to help me, but I said, no, I'll do it. I do it myself. You know, that's many times we get in trouble that way. Instead of in our times of temptation, you feel like the Lord's not doing His job because He's not taking the temptation away. That's not God's job. God's job is to help you in the midst of the temptation. And we have to say, Lord, help me. The temptation is coming on full steam ahead, and I don't know what I'm going to do if you don't help me. And the Lord will be right there. You know, every time you call out on the name of the Lord in the midst of your distress, in the midst of your temptation, did you know that the devil can't do anything but pack up and leave? He has to do it. But if we don't call out for the Lord, guess what? Temptation most likely will get the best of us. He says, but every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Not because God wasn't doing His part, it's because we were allowing our desires and appetites to be cultivated. I asked you earlier, we got to answer this question. If Satan went out of business, would we miss something? This is the old-time religion. Is that we would get a hold of something that solidifies our perspective of what God can do for us. He said, then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. The ultimate goal of the enemy is to bring destruction. It's not to bring peace and happiness and joy. It don't happen. You look out at all of the billboards with and all kinds of advertisements and suggestive things that come on the internet and everything else that looks like rapture. I'm telling you, it's not. The end of that thing is death. All right? He says, do not err, my beloved brethren. Don't listen to the propaganda from the enemy. You know, one of the tactics of military sometimes is making a lot of noise. You know, you remember when they were trying to rebuild the wall? What did the enemy try to do? They come and was making noise and was telling the people, don't listen to... maybe that was with Hezekiah. Don't listen to him. You know, he says that was with Hezekiah. Hezekiah had took the letter in, you remember, spread it out before the Lord. And the enemy was saying, don't listen to Hezekiah. He's you know, your gods can't stand. The other people didn't stand. Their gods didn't stand before us. But they weren't dealing with the real God. We're dealing with the God of creation here. He's the one that can help us. He said, don't err, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of the lights, whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. He hasn't changed since the beginning of time. He wants a relationship with mankind. That's why He created man in the beginning, is He wanted a relationship with him. And He wants that today. And if we allow the business of the devil to get in our lives, that relationship is compromised. Many times it becomes severed because of what the devil has to offer. Of his own, he says here, of his own will begat he us with the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. Of his own will. What does John 3:16 says? For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in Him should not perish but have everlasting life. We have to believe that we can be born again. We can be different. Of His own word He begat us. He begat us of with the word of truth. Wherefore, my brethren, beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Have you ever really got really angry about something and allow that to motivate you into some kind of action? And then after it was all over, how'd you feel about it? You know, I'm going to tell you a little story about myself. That way, nobody can feel like I was talking about them. I remember one time I was about, 16, 17. Somewhere along in there. I had to, my brother helped me take the hood off of my old truck because I pulled the engine out for something. I don't remember well. I put the engine back in and nobody was home but me. I had it all running and I wanted to drive it, but I wanted my hood on. My paint job was pretty fresh. A 1960 model Chevy pickup. And the hood was all steel. And it was big and heavy. And I thought, maybe I can put that on myself. And I went around, I got it picked up, and I got it over there kind of in position. And have you ever tried, some of y'all know what I'm talking about, have you ever tried to hold a hood by yourself and start the bolts at the same time? Well, I was young and stronger then probably than I am now, but I held that hood up there and I got it in position, and I was in the front holding that hood and trying to get it in position, and I got the bolt started, but not before I let it slip and scratch some of my paint. That didn't make me very happy. And I went around, seeing what I'd scratched. I was frustrated, wished I'd waited, but I let those feelings of anger build in myself, and I hit my truck with my fist. You know what I did? I had a sore fist, I had a dent in my truck, and a scratch and a chip in my paint. You know how I felt after it was all over? Not very good. You know how you're going to feel if you let wrath build up until you act on it? Same way I did. Not very good. You're going to be disappointed. You're going to wish you hadn't let anger take control of your life. So he says here, "For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God." You will never make things better by getting mad and flying off the handle and telling somebody how to hog ate the cabbage. It just won't work. No matter how bad they need to know how to hog ate the cabbage, it still won't fix it. "Wherefore, lay apart all filthiness and superfluity of naughtiness." You know, superfluity, you know what that means? That means fancy. Fancy naughtiness. You know how the enemy likes to make wickedness appear flashy, fancy, attractive, alluring? He says, "Wherefore lay apart all filthiness." Is there any filthiness in the world today? All you got to do is get in a conversation with somebody and they're going to try to tell you something or talk to you about something that's filthy. Right? Superfluity of naughtiness. Fancy, improper actions. And the devil will fluff it up and tie ribbons on it and put sparkly things all over naughtiness. He says, "Lay this aside and receive with meekness the engrafted word, which is able to save your souls." What's he want us to do? Get rid of the rubbish. The surface pleasures that the world offers, get rid of that. This is the old time religion. Get rid of the surface rubbish that the devil has out there. The superfluity of naughtiness, the filthiness, the corruption, the contamination. And receive with meekness the engrafted word, which is able to save our souls. That'll make us right with God and help us to have the power where when people come in our midst, they will stand in awe and say, I really don't know what was going on over there, but I'm going to tell you, they got a hold of something. And I'm not talking about somebody doing some kind of physical demonstration. I'm talking about the presence of God. We want it. We need it. We have to have it. And we're not going to get it if we try to do it any other way. He says, "But be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves." Did you know that we can say, "Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, I like that. That's the way it ought to be done." But are we doing it ourselves? Are we putting it in practice? Are we putting the safeguards in our own lives? Are we cultivating the things we ought to cultivate for righteousness and holiness? Are we abstaining from all appearance of evil? Are we doing that? He says, but be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving our own selves. For if any be a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man beholding his natural face in the glass. And he beholdeth himself and goeth his way and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was. But whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed. Help us to put in practice what we hear, what we read, what the Lord reveals to us when He talks to us and asks us to move up a little closer. Just don't just nod our head and say, but let's do it. Let's move up a little closer. Let's lay aside the things that the Lord has said. You know, that's really like the world. That's not, you know where that really comes from. That's really part of Vanity Fair. That's really part of Doubting Castle. That's really part of whatever it is out there that's part of the devil's business. You know, he's been in business a long time. And he has a business plan, let me tell you. But the Lord can reveal those things. And when He reveals them to us and we say, Lord, by Your help and grace, I'm going to lay it aside. That's moving up a little closer. He'll bless you with that. The saints will be blessed with your with your moving up a little closer. He says, if any man among you seem to be religious and bridleth not his tongue, but deceiveth his own heart, this man's religion is vain. Lord, help me to have the goods on hand in my heart and in my life. And he goes on, the last verse, the one that we read to begin with here. Pure religion and undefiled. The real stuff. You know, Rodney sells some pure, raw honey. That means he didn't cook it. That means he didn't add flavor to it. He didn't do anything but take it away from the bees and strain out things that little particles. That's all he did. It's pure. Don't we want the pure religion? Don't we want the stuff that will really set men's lives free? I don't want some kind of organization that people can join and be hampered with. I want them to get the real stuff. If you're unsaved here today, I don't want you to get some kind of doctrine you think is mine. I want you to get a hold of God for yourself. I want you to lay aside all of the superfluity of naughtiness and the wickedness that's in this world. I want you to get rid of all of that and get a hold of God. He says, pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this. So He gives us an explanation. To visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction. To help those that are need assistance in our world around us. And to keep himself unspotted from the world. And what kind of garments are we supposed to have? What color are they? White. You know how difficult it is to keep something that's white unspotted? Not an easy task. It's not an easy task. But the Lord has given us a white robe. And He wants us to wear it. And He wants it to stay white. Not yellow and dingy around the collar and the cuffs. He wants us to keep it white and clean. He don't want it to be splattered with the stuff we're wading through. He wants us to keep it clean. So, I started out talking about what I've witnessed. Those I've witnessed. Thinking about those that prayed for me when I had needs. Sometimes they were physical, and sometimes they were spiritual. And the witness of the Lord's presence in those prayers. And I'm thinking about the lives they lived, the integrity they had, the things they were unwilling to touch because they had integrity with God. And I want you to know, as someone that you might think is old, I'm concerned about some things I want to tell you today. I'm concerned about dress and outward appearance. One thing that happens with the world's dress and the world's outward appearance is wardrobe malfunctions. You know that? You know, I remember going to work, new car dealership, them providing uniforms, and somebody coming to work with their shirt tail out and not tucked in. And at the time, I didn't quite understand, but I do better now. And the boss come by and told the man, you need to tuck your shirt tail in. And it was like, really? Well, what difference does that make? He said, we provide this uniform, we want you to tuck your shirt tail in. You know, if I keep my shirt tail tucked in, I have less possibility of having a wardrobe malfunction. I can go around and do my job and do my task, and I don't have to worry about my clothes being a hindrance to me in various cases. You know, the world wants to present clothing that, if you stand just right, might cover everything. But if we're not careful, we'll be constantly exposed to situations where our wardrobe is liable to malfunction on us. And I believe that that's something we need to keep in consideration. It's part of the enemy's business to give us, put us in a situation where our wardrobe could malfunction. And then the devil wants us to get so desensitized that it really doesn't matter anymore. Lord, help us with that. There's a focus. You remember what I read there about laying aside the superfluity of naughtiness? You know what the world wants to do in our outward appearance? He wants to adorn it. He wants you to put things on that glitter and that draw attention. He wants you and I to put things on that cause people to say, wow, that was some kind of clothing, whatever it was. Lord, help us to be willing to be His plain, simple people. I'm thinking about those that have went on before, that I witnessed the power of the gospel in their lives. And I watched them be very careful and conscientious about how they covered, what they covered, what they allowed in their lives for outward adornment. You know, to be plain and simple today is a rare virtue, even among those that profess holiness. You think about the people out there that consider themselves holiness people. Now, I'm not talking about somebody that we would necessarily be worshiping with, but there are people out there that claim holiness. And you think about what they have embraced as far as fashion, as far as glitter, as far as just as much as they can in the parameters they're given. But I'm thinking about what James said here. Let's lay apart all filthiness, and not just the filthiness, the uncovering. We know the world is full of that. But let's lay aside the superfluity of naughtiness, the trinkets. Lord, help us to be careful. I want the power. That's what I want. I'm concerned about the entertainments of the world. I'm thinking about what has happened. This kind of goes along with being concerned about what we set before our eyes. Our world is it's a huge deal. Following professional sports today, you know that. But our world is so engrossed in sports. They're so engrossed in all kinds of form of. It's because of affluence in our society. I can remember those that, you know, there was people in the past that got saved because the only form of entertainment they could think of was going to revival meeting. There were people that came under the power of the gospel because they didn't have anything else to do on of a night after they had their work done, and they thought, well, let's go to revival. And got there, and somebody got under conviction and got saved and changed their life. You know what the chances are of somebody coming to revival because they didn't have anything that they could think to do that was fun in our world today? Not very high. I mean, the electricity would have to be off in everybody's house because there's some form of entertainment. And if the electricity goes off, they could probably stay up half the night on battery power. There is so much virtual games is a death trap of our society. You know, I'm concerned about these things. I wonder what could be accomplished for the Lord if all of these sharp minds were devoted. If the devil went out of business, you know, there could be a lot accomplished. But I'm concerned about it. It'll creep in if we're not. Would we miss it? If the devil went out of business, is there anything we'd miss? I'm concerned about what we set before our eyes. I was thinking about those that have gone on before me. I'm talking about maybe a couple generations before. They were concerned about the picture show. Before they had audio. You know what they were concerned about before that? It was called theater. It wasn't just a film. You went and seen the actors do what they did on stage. They were concerned about that. You know, Paul had to contend with forms of entertainment. Maybe the common man couldn't afford it, so he was dealing mostly with the common man. You know, they had something called the Colosseum in Paul's age back then. There's been a entertainment has been an issue for many, many generations. And I'm concerned about what we'd put before our eyes today. What would we engage ourselves in entertainment and what we put before our eyes? I'm concerned about wholehearted service to the Lord. I'm thinking about those that many years ago made it. They were so cognizant of being able to be in service with others. I remember reading about Brother Harmon. An older generation of Brother Harmon. How he worked. I believe he said at a sawmill all day and walked a number of miles to hold a meeting and then walked back home and worked the next day. I don't know how the man did it. I don't know how many miles he walked, but he didn't have an automobile. Maybe it was in an age where automobiles weren't very reliable, didn't have any other form of transportation, and he walked. How many of us would walk 5 miles to church after we worked at the sawmill all day? Just try to put it in perspective. I mean, most of us, if we worked all day at the sawmill, we think there is absolutely no way I can make it to church. I'm plumb give out. But this man not only worked at the sawmill, but walked to church. I'm thankful, folks, I'm telling you, I'm thankful for washing machines, for automobiles, and cell phones. I'm thankful for every one of them. But Lord, help me not to allow those things to become a hindrance. That ought to be an asset. You know, when you hand somebody some tools on the job, you expect them to get more work done. So how responsible are we? Lord, help me to get here on time. Attendance. It's important. Qualifying for participation in leadership. You know we need that? I'm thankful for those that are endeavoring to be qualified. But the Lord needs participants and He needs leadership amongst His people. And if we're window shopping at the devil's business, and we're allowing things to be a distraction, and we're not willing to lay aside the superfluity of naughtiness and the filthiness that's out there in the world, if we're not willing to put it aside and get a hold of the Lord and receive the with meekness the engrafted word, the power is going to struggle. The power is going to struggle in our midst. It's not going to be there like those that wrote the words to the song, "Give Me That Old Time Religion." That wrote the song, "Send the Power Down." I want the power in our midst today. And I want us to be able to look the devil in the eye and tell him we're not giving up no ground. I want to be able to do that. But not just me. I want the next generation to be able to do that. And I want you to be able to do it with confidence. Not arrogance, but with confidence. I want you to know, as Brother Sammons would tell us, that you're saved. You can have a no-so salvation. You can know where you stand with the Lord. It's not some kind of wishy-washy thing, but I want you to get a hold of the old-time religion. Something that really makes a change in your heart, changes your desires and your appetites, one that you guard instead of jeopardize. Lord, help us all. Would you pray for me? I want to be faithful.